Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition, for Saturday, June 6th and Sunday, June 7th. We'll start on the front page today. There's a lot in our paper. Let's take a look at the headline, Growing Success. Students volunteers combine on community garden project. And this comes to us from reporter Christy Jankowski, Dateline Danville. Growing food in a community garden is bringing together students and others for the third year in a row. Danville High School students, as well as students from Northridge Middle School, teamed up with staff and partners at Carle Foundation Hospital and the University of Illinois Extension Office to grow and provide fresh vegetables in the community. Kimberly David, CEO of the Project Success of Vermilion County, says the ongoing commitment to create a community garden strengthens relationships. She says, they've worked hard to grow and provide fresh vegetables for our community. Their commitment, teamwork, and service are making a real difference. And this morning, many came out to harvest the fruits of their hard labor. Lots of people came out from the community this morning, and we gave away fresh produce such as lettuce, kale, cilantro, and Swiss chard, Vicki Clark, Community Garden Coordinator, said. The community really got together this morning, and everybody was really happy to be out there. Clark added some of the people went out and picked their own vegetables, or we did have pre-bagged vegetables that were harvested today. Brianna Buford, site coordinator, says the community garden is a way for kids to connect with each other and learn how to plant their own garden someday. They had the kids doing a lot of different activities, from weeding to watering the garden to planting the seeds. Then they did different activities. They planted their own tomato in their own individual pots, and they got to take it home. They made a seed bomb, which is basically clay, seeds, and dirt. They got to take that home, Buford said. Sometimes there's a classroom portion of it. So they make like soil cups, which have different ingredients representing different things in the garden. So the kids just do a lot of different activities. Buford added that the students not only learned how to plant, weed, and take care of a garden, but they also did a lot of other art activities like creating stepping stones and more. A little learning goes a long way, especially during the summer. Buford said there is a summer program and it's not too late to get involved. She says to go to their Facebook page or website to find programs for students. During the summer months, we have summer programming. We'll go out there once a week for an hour and a half, Buford said. And then during the winter, the University of Illinois Extension Office members will teach students how to do things like canning vegetables. One year, the University of Illinois Extension Office taught the kids about canning and preserving food, and they actually made salsa. So they get that hands-on portion of it, and they also get the portion of where they can see what they can do with the produce that they grow, Buford added. Buford said the community garden is part of the mission of Project Success and others to reduce gun violence in the community. We're able to tie different things like that into the gardening process, which is great because it's giving kids something to do, and it's giving kids a new avenue to find something new and, you know, possibly expose them to something that they could make a career of in the future, Buford said. The community garden is off Logan Street near the Carle at the Riverfront Building, according to Buford. Carle Clark has worked for District 118 for 11 years, and she says she sees the impact firsthand. I personally know what impact this has on the students, just being able to have this opportunity to go out and be outside and plant something, watch it grow, and then harvest it, Clark said. Huge shout out to Project Success. They have a huge heart for the community and for the students. We're proud of the positive impact our students and staff continue to make through this meaningful project, David added about the community garden. Continuing with news on our front page, Juneteenth celebration expands to full weekend. And this too comes to us from Christy Jankowski, Dateline Danville. Celebrate Juneteenth all weekend long in Danville with a 3-day event commemorating the emancipation of the last slave plantation in the country. We've done 1-day celebrations, but with Juneteenth following on Friday this year, we made the decision to go ahead and stretch it out a little bit, said Chris Hightower, president of the Juneteenth Celebration Committee. And this year there are a few new events like the Miss Juneteenth pageant and a $1,000 scholarship going to the winner. It's an honor to be able to start a new tradition and to help young women from our community continue their education and build toward their future, said pageant co-coordinator Sharda Pascal. Participating in the pageant are Amisha Rapier, Serenity Reed, Deshaya Polk, and Tariana Wooten. Hightower says the scholarship check will be presented by Philip Davis Sr. and Yolanda Davis, parents of Anaya Davis who lost her life to gun violence last June. The pageant will be at 6 p.m. on Friday, June 19th at the Laura Lee Fellowship House at 212 East Williams Street, and tickets are $10. Hightower says part of the ticket cost will go to the contestants. Half is going to go toward prizes for the contestants, and the other half will be donated back to Laura Lee, Hightower says. Hightower says he wanted to shout out another group throwing a block party June 19th in Carver Park. He said, so if you don't want to put on your dress clothes and come then check and come check out the pageant. The DJCC Scholarship Fund will host a block party from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. on June 20th at Lincoln Park. This summer, we'll be hosting three block parties throughout Danville. At all three, we'll be doing community outreach, neighborhood cleanups to help beautify the city through Keep Vermilion County Beautiful, and the Healing Illinois Initiative, said Project Success Violence Prevention Outreach Coordinator Jamie Nightlinger. Our Youth Council Peace Ambassadors have some awesome ideas about how to honor the history of Juneteenth and the legacies of local history makers. During the block party, there'll be free food for kids and vendors available. Nightlinger said there will be members of the Youth Council Peace Ambassadors who'll be running the event and will speak to the community. Other speakers include members from the Survivor Resource Center, Vermilion County Continuum of Care, and Crosspoint Human Services. Really, an opportunity for a community to come together and to fellowship and to build, Hightower said of the impact of community block parties. When done properly, it's a great opportunity for you to get out there, meet your neighbors, and know what they're doing in the community and the kind of share ideas, build ideas, and network. The finale of the event will be a barbecue cook-off from 11 to 6 at June 21st at Lincoln Park. During the Steppin' in the Park barbecue and Father's Day cookout, community members will have a chance to strut their stuff. It's just a classic form of dance that black people do that is kind of just a very smooth and elegant type of dance, Hightower said. It can become very complex when you really get good at it, so it's an opportunity for people to come out and just kick back and enjoy and just celebrate the holiday weekend. Grill masters are welcome to join the barbecue contest with a $35 entry fee, which goes towards cook-off awards and the DJCC Scholarship Fund. I've been hosting Steppin' in the Park events and barbecue cook-offs for over 10 years here in Danville, so when I was asked to partner with the DJCC, I was excited to help celebrate the holiday as well as the fathers in our town, said DJCC member Darnell Smith. Awards given out are named after Chucky Robinson, Bud Goward, and Jesse Cleveland. If you want to participate as a vendor, contact Hightower at 217-549-3172 or by email at thehightowerfoundation@gmail.com. Hightower said there will be multiple activities for kids and families as well as opportunities to learn about Juneteenth. Project Success and Danville Public Library are working together to provide some activities, Hightower said. We'll have several stage acts. We're going to have a puppeteer come that morning who will be doing a show for the kids. And then in the afternoon, we'll have the DJ, Kristen McKinney, who is originally from Danville. Hightower says his mission for this Juneteenth event is to let people come out and get to know their neighbors and to celebrate this amazing holiday, he said. Juneteenth is a celebration for the freeing of enslaved black people, but this holiday is not only for black people to come out and celebrate and learn. It's an opportunity for everybody to come out and celebrate and learn, because Juneteenth is not just a black holiday, it's an American holiday. Hightower added there are more events added to the weekend, so pay close attention to the Danville Juneteenth Committee Facebook page for more information. Our final story on today's front page comes to us from Capital News Illinois. Pope Leo gets 8.65 from Illinois Treasurer. Vatican City has been a popular spot for Illinois dignitaries since Chicago native Robert Prevost ascended to the papacy last year. Leaders from Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson to Governor J.B. Pritzker have come bearing gifts for Prevost, now known as Pope Leo XIV, a Chicago-brewed DePope beer, city-sourced jardinera, an Illini number 14 jersey, and a White Sox Chicago gear, and more. Illinois State Mike Frederick's gift, however, was possibly the most on brand. He delivered the pontiff a certificate to reclaim $8.65 of his own money, a sum the successor of St. Peter had held in a now-closed PayPal account. The money had been sitting in Illinois unclaimed property account, and Frederick's, the account's administrator, has been trying to return it. We found this money last year after he became Pope, Prerix told Capital News Illinois in a phone call Thursday morning while still in Italy. We reached out to the local archdiocese trying to get him to claim it, and it fell through the cracks. Plan B? Well, let's deliver it in person, he said. That opportunity came to fruition on Wednesday. He was invited to accompany a delegation organized by the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, and he and his wife Erica decided to make it a personal trip. He was raised Lutheran, she's Catholic. They paid for the trip personally, he said, using no campaign or state funds. My wife and I came together and made it a bit of a longer trip, he said, but I figured when I had the opportunity to meet the Pope, he would take it. He also gifted the pontiff a commemorative Abraham Lincoln coin from a leftover supply the treasurer's office had minted years ago and a book about Chicago history. Erica Ferrex brought some of her family's rosaries for the Pope to bless. As for the $8.65, Ferrex acknowledged that it's garnered good press. It's an election year, and Ferrex is slated to face Max Solomon in the general election, who won the GOP nod as a write-in candidate. But his marketing of unclaimed property is nothing new. We know when people hear about our unclaimed property department, when they see an example of a real person getting money, more people visit our website, and when more people visit our website, we return more money, he said. Part of the reason we have smashed records on unclaimed property is because of how we market it differently. Ferrex became treasurer in 2015, and his office has since returned more than $2.5 billion to more than 2.5 million people. That means Pope Leo's PayPal windfall accounts for roughly 0.000000034% of the money returned. Some of them are amazing, he said, of the returns of unclaimed property. We have an $11 million return, which is the largest in U.S. history. We've had $1 million returns, half million, and some for only $8.65 actually probably will be the most memorable ones of the time in my office. Let's move off of our front page, but can return to news of local interest. This was from page 2. The foundation seeks bids to renovate Fisher Theater. And this is a staff report. The Vermilion Heritage Foundation is soliciting sealed bids from qualified general contractors for the renovation of the lower level dressing room area of the historic Fisher Theater at 158 North Vermilion Street. The project includes demolition and renovation of existing lower level spaces beneath the stage and construction of new dressing rooms, restrooms, showers, lounge areas, and green room facilities. A mandatory pre-bid site tour will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, June 10th at the Fisher Theater. Bid documents may be obtained by contacting the owner or architect. Questions regarding the project should be directed to Jennifer Spencer, Studio GWA, by email at jspencer@studiogwa.com. All bids must be submitted electronically no later than 4 p.m. local time on Friday, July the 3rd. Submit bids electronically to director@fishertheater.com and jspencer@studiogwa.com. The project requires compliance with Illinois Business Enterprise Program participation goals, with 16% of vendors certified as BEP vendors, subject to grant administration approval. The Vermilion Heritage Foundation reserves the right to reject any or all bids, waive informalities, and accept the proposal deemed to be in the best interest of the organization. And another event coming up for local interest, tomorrow on Tuesday, Taps on Tuesday, a series of programs honoring soldiers of the American Revolution will start Tuesday the 9th with the Taps on Tuesday program. Lori Hutt of Georgetown will be the guest speaker, talking about two of her ancestors who served in the Revolutionary War. One of them became the second governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. The following 3 weeks will focus on Revolutionary War soldiers buried in Vermilion County. The weekly program is held at Spring Hill Cemetery Soldiers Circle starting at 6 p.m. It's presented by the War Museum, the Ward Hill Layman Civil War Roundtable, and Danville Township. Larry Weatherford and Greg Green will host the program. Rebecca Woodrum will lead the national anthem and perform a 1700s era song accompanied by Keith Buzlog. Taps will be sounded by Anita Zeller. We're approaching the middle of our time together today, so let's take a break from the news and take a look at the obituaries and death notices for this weekend. These were those received by Friday at 5 p.m. First up, Francis W. Keenan. Francis W. Keenan, age 90, emeritus professor at the College at Brockport, New York, died on May 26th. While services are planned and that we know that burial will be at the Mount Olivet Cemetery in Brockport, New York, but no further information is provided for Mr. Keenan's services. Louis Lou Hinkle. Louis Lou Hinkle, age 73, of Danville, passed away at his home on April 26 with his family by his side. A celebration of his life will be held at 5 p.m. on Friday, June 12th at Catlin High School at 701 West Vermilion Street in Catlin. Memorials may be made in loose memory to Salt Fork Athletics / Basketball or the OSF Cancer Center. In lieu of flowers, please consider donating to one of the above or to your favorite charity. Bonnie K. Stanton. Bonnie K. Stanton, age 84, passed away peacefully surrounded by her family on Wednesday, May 27th at Carl Foundation Hospital. A memorial visitation and service was held on June 2nd at Morgan Memorial Home. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to an outstanding faith-based nonprofit, Mobility Worldwide, MO Columbia, at 4825 East Meyer Industrial Drive in Columbia, Missouri, or online at mobilityworldwide.org. And our final death notice today is from Dorothy Arlene James. Dorothy Arlene James of Hartville, Ohio, formerly of Danville, transitioned to her heavenly life on May 9th. Memorial services will be held at 10 a.m. on June 13th at First Church of the Nazarene in Danville. Burial will follow in Sunset Memorial Park. Blurton Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Let's turn our attention to the editorials today. Our editorial column is titled, Plenty to Celebrate This Summer. As the nation prepares to mark its 250th anniversary, Vermilion County residents can add a celebration of their own to summer festivities, the county's 200th birthday. Representatives of the Vermilion County Museum plan a number of special events to recognize the county's history with the theme 200 Years of New Frontiers. Oh, that's cute. One of the first events will be Westville's Freedom Celebration, set for June 8th through the 14th at various locations in the village. Visit the community's Facebook page to find a complete listing of activities. The days will include dinners, a queen pageant, and a patriotic costume contest. June 12th through the 14th features a patriotic home and yard decorating contest, an open house at the Westville Public Library, a cruise in, music, and an open house at the Westville Historical Depot and Museum. One of the community's well-known businesses, Latoe's Hardware, will celebrate its 80th anniversary with an open house on June 13th. The day will also include a flea market, tours of the high school, and the school's alumni dinner. On June 14th, Westville plans a golf cart parade, a flea market, and a baseball exhibition game featuring the Vermilion Vols against a Lady Tigers alumni team at 3 p.m. at Zambrelletti Park. The Vols play baseball based on the game's 1858 rules. For information, visit the Vols website at vermilionvols.org. Another anniversary being celebrated this year is the 80th anniversary of Danville Stadium, home of the Danville Dans. Danville faces off against the Johnstown, Pennsylvania Mill Rats at 6:30 p.m. on June 6th and will take on the Terre Haute Rex at 4:30 on June 7th. Other games this week include June 10th against the Dubois County Bombers from Huntingburg, Indiana, and two games June 12th and 13th with the Burlington Iowa Bees. Danville Stadium at 9th and Highland Boulevard opened in 1946 as the home of the Brooklyn Dodgers minor league team. Since then, it's been the home of baseball players from major leaguers to little leaguers. This year, Dan's roster includes players from 11 states, with Illinois, Indiana, and Florida leading the way. Tickets are $8 for visitors 13 and older, $5 for ages 6 through 12, and those 5 and younger are admitted for free. Tuesday tickets are $3, and Sundays are family day with tickets at $6. For information, visit the Dan's website at danvilledance.org. To top off June's busy beginning, the Vermilion History Museum will sponsor Man's Chapel Gospel Sing from 1:30 to 4 on June 14th at the chapel at 15205 Man's Chapel Road in Rossville. Tours, a historic display, and food will be available with music scheduled for 2 to 3:30. Visitors should bring lawn chairs. For information, call the museum at 217-442-2922. It's a great start to celebrating Vermilion County's 200th anniversary and the 250th birthday of the United States. Don't let these special events pass by without taking the opportunity to learn about the area's past and enjoy its present. Well, we haven't heard from Kevin Cullen in a while, so let's take a look at his column, The Irish Hiker. Daily Illini fueled lifelong passion. Every person gets some amazing lucky breaks. One of mine came 50 years ago this month. Super fortunate moments come in many forms. A narrow miss on the battlefield, a random bet at the base track, meeting Mr. Right at the supermarket, a blind date that puts you in the arms of the most amazing woman in the world. In June 7, 1976, I began writing for the Daily Illini, student newspaper at the University of Illinois. At that time, the DI, Daily Illini, was judged the best student newspaper in the country. It was independent, run by students. Every reporter was there because he wanted to be there. He was paid for every one of his stories, and the paper was sold, not simply given away, as are most student newspapers. Throughout the summer and fall of 1976, I was experiencing, growing, writing, learning things that I would have never learned in journalism school. Thanks to all the clippings that I amassed, I got a reporting job on a daily newspaper 2 weeks after graduation in January 1977, and I've been writing for newspapers, sometimes two or three at the same time, ever since. Even more important for me, the Daily Illini showed me how much fun it was to be a college kid. I'd gone to Danville Junior College for 2 years, then commuted to Urbana each day to continue at Illinois. As soon as classes were over, I'd drive back to work as a stock boy at Danville's Ace Hardware, where I'd worked since my junior year at Schlarman. Because of all that, I was always running. But I didn't really sample college life until senior year, when I joined the dedicated, passionate, fun-filled staff of the Daily Illini. The editor-in-chief was Pat Wingert, a brilliant young journalist who went on to write for the Chicago Sun-Times and Newsweek. She welcomed me to the small summer staff and gave me a test on newspaper style, how to spell the names of campus buildings, how to identify Greek letters, how to detect libel. By passing it, I was able to also edit stories on the copy desk at night. My editors were Paula Goodwin, the news editor, and Russ Mitchell, the city editor. Both knew how to get the best out of fellow students by gently pointing out weaknesses in stories and celebrating good work. Everyone was enthusiastic, eager, and fun to be around. The DI office was in the basement of Illini Hall, a brick building constructed in 1907. The newsroom was funky and cluttered, filled with piles of old newspapers, oddball posters, battered tables, and wobbly chairs. It was where we made friends, experimented, discussed issues, and pounded out stories using manual typewriters and sheets of beige newsprint. It was an electric atmosphere, absolutely brimming with excitement and creativity. I fell in love with it. The summer of 1976 was especially newsy because of the Summer Olympics and all the many bicentennial events. I was assigned the Urbana beat, covering Urbana Mayor Hiram Paley's administration and the 14-member Urbana City Council. I had committee meetings to cover, plus Monday night council meetings. Council meetings started at 7:30 and sometimes went until 2 o'clock Tuesday morning. It was tiring, but I loved it. I wrote about the sale of the Urbana Lincoln Hotel, the creation of a controversial downtown redevelopment plan, city closures, campus parking, city elections, plans to build a new county jail, the closure of an old trailer park, passage of a handicap accessibility ordinance, a fight over a landfill, and on and on. I also did general assignment stuff, the hiring of a new marching band director, a story about soybean research, a murder trial, the relocation of an 1840s cottage, a bluegrass music campout, and a Labor Day jam. Fall semester was even better. Everybody came back to campus, so the staff mushroomed in size and scope. I kept the Urbana beat and quickly fit in with the dozens of DI veterans who had taken the summer off. I was in the office every day writing and doing phone interviews. I also did two night shifts on the copy desk. That fall brought the resignation of Secretary of Agriculture Earl Butts, who was overheard telling an off-color racist joke. The Champaign News Gazette wouldn't print it, and neither would the Courier in Urbana. TV and radio wouldn't touch it either. Only the Daily Illini let readers know what sparked Butts' crash landing. Then came the presidential race, pitting incumbent Gerald Ford against former Georgia Governor Jimmy Carter. I remember two highlights: the TV debate in which Ford said Poland was not under communist domination, a guffaw that brought a chorus of hoots and laughs. Then there was Carter's long interview in Playboy magazine, in which he confessed to have had lust in his heart for a Sunday school teacher. That was saying something. Looking back on those two semesters, it still fills my heart with joy and pride. Pat, Paula, Russ, Dave, Susan, Arnie, Clemmy, Mick, Kathy, Howie, Peggy, Barry, Lizanne, Les, Larry, Irv, and all the rest always will live in my memory. We were college kids, but we were also real newspaper people. Kicking doors, checking facts, asking questions, telling stories, informing readers, making history, and putting out 14,000 papers every morning. 50 years later, I still feel lucky. There are a couple of stories in the sports section today that really caught my eye. And this is for those of you that are Chicago Bear fans or have a passion for just Illinois professional teams. Bears Advance Indiana Stadium Plan. This comes to us from Brendan Moore of the Capital News Illinois. First, Arlington Heights was the sole focus. Then it was Chicago. Then back to Arlington Heights. Then either Arlington Heights or Hammond, Indiana. Then perhaps Chicago if the other two options fell through. And now apparently Hammond. The long, winding Chicago Bears Stadium Road took another turn Friday when the team announced that its board of directors voted to advance a stadium project across the state line in Indiana. It comes just days after Illinois lawmakers failed to advance legislation that would have granted the organization tax certainty on a stadium project in Illinois. We believe a world-class stadium project in Hammond will transform the region, connecting Northwest Indiana to the south side of Chicago through the Loop and across neighborhoods and suburbs stretching north of the city, Bears Chairman George McCaskey and Team President Kevin Warren said in a statement. It will bring Chicagoland together and deliver new opportunities to its residents and businesses. It's the biggest step the pride and joy of Illinois has taken towards bolting the state it's called home for its entire existence for Hammond, where lawmakers have promised more than $1 billion in public subsidies. But even so, the Bears statement left what's becoming trademark ambiguity. They did not signal that the vote amounted to a final decision, and they even acknowledged that the exact site for a stadium in Hammond was to be selected. A top Illinois lawmaker confirmed to Illinois Capital News Illinois that any talk of the Bears leaving the state is premature. I got a call from Kevin Warren this morning, and he told me they were going to release a statement about moving forward with Hammond, said Senator Bill Cunningham of Chicago. He also said he looks forward to continuing discussions with me. Cunningham also pointed out the Bears statement resembled the one the team put out in February after Indiana lawmakers approved a bill creating a public stadium authority. We're committed to finishing the remaining site-specific necessary due diligence to support our vision to build a world-class stadium near the Wolf Lake area in Hammond, the team said in a statement in February, before deploying a cadre of lobbyists in Illinois' capital for the next 4 months in an effort to get the deal done. Representative Cam Buckner, Chicago, that led the lead House negotiator, said Warren also called him. He said he finished the conversation by committing to continued discussions around their pursuit of a new stadium in Illinois. Buckner also noted that the statement released today is actually less definitive than the one earlier this year. That's not a criticism, Buckner said. It's simply an acknowledgement that the Bears' own language leaves additional flexibility and does not represent a final decision. A spokesperson for Governor J.P. Pritzker said that the team's shifting positions have hurt its progress with Illinois lawmakers. The Bears have built a storied legacy in Illinois for over 100 years, but have spent the last 6 years, and especially the last few months, shifting their position on a stadium location. That has hindered their progress, said Pritzker spokesperson Matt Hill. Today appears to be another instance of that after Illinois leaders have been working with the Bears in good faith. Governor Pritzker has always been clear that he wants the Bears to stay in Illinois and still remains open to a sensible solution that protects taxpayers. Well, it looks like there is still a lot of open space in those discussions, but I wanted you all to know kind of where it stood. Well, let's spend our last couple of minutes together looking at our local roundup. Dan's dropped third in a row. These articles come to us from Marvin Holman. The Danville Dans lost their third straight game in a row on Thursday, falling 8-4 to the Springfield Lucky Horseshoes. The Dans had a 4-0 lead in the fourth, with Chase Bays getting an RBI triple in the first, Carson Brady getting an RBI triple in the third, Mason McReynolds reached on a fielder's choice in the third, and Josiah Serms scored on a balk. But the Lucky Horseshoes scored two in the fourth and three in the seventh and eighth innings to get the win, with Pedro Rangel dropping to 1-1 for the season. In Legion baseball, the Junior Speakers split opener. After a 28 loss in the first game, the Post 210 Junior Speakers Gold rebounded with a 9-6 win in the second game of a doubleheader against Champaign Post 24 Junior Legion team. In Prep Boys Golf, Covington was fifth in sectional